I would hope you could tell me, because various people have been asking me, what does the Dean do?
And maybe suggesting what he might or ought to
indeed, do. Indeed, and I'm still trying to discover what it is. But I suppose it's everything from the senior person on the chapter and making decisions in relation to worship and so on, to being a kind of a CEO of a medium-sized business. And as I say, I'm gradually discovering some of the aspects of the job.
I recall on your installation on March the 31st, and was subsequently reported in the Church of Ireland Gazette, you stated that the cathedral was, in your opinion, above all, a house of prayer. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yes, we might tend to, indeed, the tourists might tend to think it was a museum or a place that people come to visit, but the basis of the cathedral is as a place of worship. And, I mean, whether people come for some of the regular forms of worship, or indeed whether they come as tourists and perhaps experience something of the numinous of the place, or use the opportunities that are provided for a period of silence or private prayer, that ultimately is the main function.
That's right.
Of the building.
For those of us who have seen the hundreds and perhaps thousands queue up to visit the cathedral from time to time, they see it as a place of visitation and pilgrimage. What's the significance of that, and what impact might that have on the development of the cathedral in the future, these masses and numbers?
I think we're very fortunate to have so many people visiting, both on tour buses and from ships that come in, and just individual visitors. I think we're reckoned to be about the third most popular site after Guinness and the Book of Kells.
Yes.
And I suppose, speaking to people who've come, I've been impressed with what they've had to say about the place, and both in terms of history and spirituality. And each visitor has a story. So, I mean, while we're extremely grateful to have them visiting, both as a source of income and purpose, but more than that, we hope that in some way, some small way, they're ministered to and they go away feeling better.
And I'm sure many of them do. And I'm sure many of them are drawn by the music traditions of the cathedral. Are there any changes there taking place in regard to the presentation of music? I'm thinking maybe of contemporary music from time to time, alongside traditional forms and the use of traditional composers within the Church of Ireland.
Yes, well, I suppose the variety of composers are used. But in addition to the liturgical end of the music, there are various recitals and various concerts, almost on a daily, certainly on a weekly basis. And these attract various people who mightn't otherwise come to the cathedral.
In compliance with the Church of Ireland Constitution, and indeed the provisions for St. Patrick's itself, two canonries at St. Patrick's Cathedral are now reserved for ecumenical canons. What does that mean?
This is a relatively recent innovation, and two people who are just finishing, one Roman Catholic, one a Presbyterian, were elected for 5 years, and we'll now be electing two more.
Professor McDonough and Reverend Ken Newell.
That's right.
Who's just retiring. Yes,
yes. And they have taken a full part in the activities of the cathedral. But of course, even before we had canonries, we had many services with an ecumenical dimension, and certain clergy of other denominations were regular visitors and participants in the worship.
Tell me, and the listeners, have you any immediate plans for the cathedral? Are the days too early for you to be formulating plans?
Well, I suppose I have thoughts on a number of things, but one of the ongoing things, of course, is the ongoing restoration of the building.
Yes.
And the next major project is the work on the Lady Chapel, which will take quite a bit of time and quite a bit of money.
And presumably the whole thing is like the painting of the fourth bridge, when you end one sphere into another.
It is.
Yeah.
And I suppose overall I want to see that as a church we're fully integrated into Church of Ireland, worship and so forth, and that were seen as a sort of showcase.
Along those lines, I would just want to pursue that a little more and talk about the potential avenues down which it could go to fulfilling an even greater role in the spiritual story of Dublin and the country at large. Do you see ways in which that could be developed?
Yes, I think we're always looking for ways in which we can reach out both to the unchurched or to people who are of other faiths and so on. So, I mean, none are excluded. All are welcome. There's no specific project. The education officer does what he does with schools. And as I say, we're always open to to reaching out and being a presence.
Well, now two questions and one to finish, Dean Victor Stacey. When people hear of you, of Dean of St. Patrick's, inevitably a name of one of your famous precursors, Jonathan Swift, comes to mind. There have also, of course, been many deans whose names are less well known. Do you see in any of those who have gone before you a model you particularly admire? And secondly, early days though these are, how would you like to be remembered as the new Dean of St. Patrick's?
Yes, well, I don't specifically want to be remembered as a Jonathan Swift, who towards the end of his ministry seems to have become somewhat insane.
That's
but
right.
We did go to the same schools, so there may be something in common. No, in the last century, I suppose there were names like John Bernard, David Wilson, Victor Griffin, but each one contributes something of themselves and of their talents. And perhaps the best thing would be if I wasn't remembered. It might mean I had done something even more worthwhile.